You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Greetings, hello, and welcome to another episode recorded on location at Mellow Matt's Music and More, 1200 Small House Road, Bowling Green, Kentucky. I'm your host, Captain Dean, and my guest is an incredibly talented singer, songwriter, guitarist. He's formerly of the band Undead Anna and is currently active as a solo artist and member of Kiss Kiss Bang, Clayton Crowder. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for doing this. You know what starts it?
Yeah,
you're
a
fan of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I listen every week.
Where are you from?
I'm from Morgantown, Kentucky, Butler County.
Yep.
People who are more county savvy. It's a little north of here. John King, sixth floor, resides there now.
Yeah, and he's close to the, what is that, Muhlenberg County?
Yeah, he's at Huntsville.
Yeah, Huntsville.
A little ways, yeah. But been there for most of my life. I moved to Louisville for a little while and then to Indiana. Did not dig on that too much.
Where at?
I ended up in, which I think, I'm not, like, I don't know Louisville enough to know, but I was told it was kind of a rougher part of town, the Shively area.
Oh, that's where Bratcher's from.
Yeah. Right. So I didn't realize it. Honestly, being from Butler County, they get a little rowdy themselves.
Yeah.
So I didn't see too much, except for, I don't know, the first week or so, there was some questionable acts around. But, so I didn't even play while I was up there too much. But besides that, I've just been down here.
Yeah.
Just
Were you born in Bowling Green?
Born in the circuit, yeah.
Yeah.
Born in Bowling Green. And
grew up in Butler County.
Grew up in Butler County.
Well, that's cool. Not too far away, obviously. There's a lot of musical talent to come from that neck of the woods, really, that a lot of these podcasts I've done so far talk about the connection of Glasgow and Bowling Green and the music scene. But there's also a large connection between Morgantown, Brownsville, I guess you could go as far as Central City, and a lot of musicians up in that area that would come down here to play shows and make a name for themselves in a way, and then go back home and all that stuff. So, John King obviously lives there, and I'm trying to think who else is from that neck of the woods. I think I end up more in Central City when I think of a lot of music talent that comes from up there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I had a few friends who are incredible musicians, but they didn't do a whole lot after we become adults.
Mm-hmm.
The bass player for Undead Anna, Justin Abel is his name. He's from Butler County, too.
Oh, okay.
So we've known each other for a long, long time.
That's cool. Well, we're going to go back to the beginning there before we even get into Undead Anna. When did you start playing music?
I started, I think I was 13 years old.
And you're a primary guitarist?
Yeah.
Or do you dabble on anything else?
I recently, as in like the last 4 years, kind of started messing with the harmonica a little bit.
Right.
But in no way am I good enough to play in front of somebody yet.
So just piddle around with it?
Yeah. So it's just been the guitar, and I didn't even sing for the longest time. My father kind of always tried to push that, or not push it on me, but try to get it out of me.
Right.
To do it.
You're definitely doing it now.
Yeah. Well, I actually enjoy it more than playing guitar at times, depending on what we're doing.
So when did you start playing guitar?
That was 13. 14. So yeah, I got a guitar. I got a Les Paul. Let me be specific. I got an Epiphone.
Gibson Epiphone.
Special, you know, like the little player pack.
Yeah.
I got that. Got that for Christmas one year. Messed with it for a little while. Learned your obvious beginner song, Smoke on the Water, and all that stuff, and kind of put it down. And didn't touch it for a minute. And then got threatened with selling it in a yard sale if I didn't try harder. So I kind of picked up my game a little bit.
Wow.
And there's a real, real cool story with, I think it's cool, with upgrading, getting my first big boy guitar, if you will. And I found this Les Paul on eBay that I really, really wanted. It's a little pricey. I was, according to my father, I wasn't in the talented range for it yet, so I had to prove it to him. And he gave me a task to learn Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven, from start to finish, note for note, solo and everything.
Start to finish, not even just the beginning, but the whole thing.
So I had to, he's like, I'll get that guitar for you if you can do that. So I worked on that for a long, long time, and did a lot of, you know, he'd come home from work, second shift, or first shift, I guess, he'd come home in the afternoon, I'd set him down and play it to a certain point, and he'd be like, not quite it, until I finally got it. Finally impressed him enough with it, and he bought that guitar that night.
Wow.
And I still have it.
That's cool.
I won't let go of it for
no,
that reason.
No, you got to hold that forever.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So once you got good at guitar, how did you get into, like, maybe your first band or, like, jamming with people? Like, when did it really start to become a thing that you saw the vision on, that you could do this and you're gonna do something about it?
Yeah, I first started playing in a band when I was 16 years old in high school. Horrible band name, Pandora Fusebox was the name of the band name, and it was just a bunch of friends from high school. Did a lot of weird stuff. It was weird music, I thought so anyway. But it got me used to playing with a drummer, playing on time, playing with other people.
Well, just learning the craft of it, you know.
Songwriting.
Yeah.
Also, played my first show in front of people in that band, so kind of broke that ice for me.
Hmm.
But, that flaked out, and I don't consider it to be my real, I really, really want to do it until I was already a man, a grown man, I guess you'd say, about 18 or so, and started playing the bars up here.
Right.
In Bowling Green. I had a fake ID. it would get me and never failed me, not once.
That's great.
I got in to some places and got to play here and there. And then I started picking up a lot of reoccurring nights at Wawa back when it was a big thing. So I played there a couple nights a week, just playing covers and whatnot.
As a solo artist,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just acoustic.
Just doing like acoustic stuff.
Yeah. And I did that for a long time.
What year was this around?
That was about, 2008, 2009, 2010.
Right. They were hopping at that point.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great time. I spent a lot of time there, whether I was playing or not.
Yeah.
The blues jams on Sunday nights, I loved those. I didn't ever feel like I was good enough to
would attend those there. And at the time, I lived in Rockville. I lived really close to, you know, Wawa, and so I would drive up just to really just hang out in the crowd.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you'd see the list, and there's like nine drummers on the list. And right. I'm like, I'll just sit over here and watch, you know. And
it was intimidating.
They always made me get up there and play.
Yeah. It's fun, though. It's just fun listening to them. They always had so much fun.
And there was always, like, the level of musicianship. You had the beginner kids and the intermediate levels of people, and then you had the super pros.
Right.
Every now and then would pop in and play, and you know, the guys that are like staples at those things, you know. And to me, that was so cool to see the melting pot of it all. And I think for younger people, that had an impact on them, you know.
I always remember the ones who really held that blues jam, in my eyes at least, was Kenny and Lippert and Lowe, I think, was what's his first name? I can't do this on a recording.
I know. It's the worst part of doing this.
Not Arch Johnson.
You forget everybody's name.
Gosh. It's awful. Anyway, good, incredible musicians.
Yeah. And Greg Williams, I think, attends a lot of those for a long time.
Yeah. So it was very intimidating to me. So I know I'd hop up with those a few times, depending on who was playing. But most of the time, I just stayed in the crowd on that.
Yeah.
So I did that for a real, real long time. Till John King had a side band for the first time outside of Sixth Floor called Southbound.
Yes.
He got me opening for them a few times, and I met his drummer at the time, Reed Wilkinson.
Yep.
And we were about the same age, like the same type of music. And we really hit it off on that and started jamming in his parents' basement for 6 months or so before we really took off with it, and that was the start of my first real band, Undead Anna.
Right. And that was about what?
We met...
2010, 2011?
Yeah, yeah, early 2011. Yeah, for sure. And then started writing. Now, I had a bunch of songs that I'd written in the past or had halfway written that no one had ever heard. And there were a few that we started on in that basement and worked those up for a while. We didn't have anybody else to play with. Mm-hmm. I think I ended up getting Justin Abel, my friend from Butler County, to come play bass for us for a little while to jam out some songs.
Right. And then, you got in with Wade England at one point, and that became the band.
Well, we called Wade up to record these songs, and
right.
Wade kind of, just being a nice guy, that Wade is, he's like, yeah, you can come up on some Sunday night, and y'all can record a couple songs, and we'll drink a few beers, and that's the end of it. So we went up there and did that, and started cutting a four-song demo, and the first day, he was super intrigued by it, and really interested in started pestering us, wanting to be the other guitar player in the band. So I think I held him on a string for a minute just for fun, but then we let him in.
This is cool because I think your guys' podcasts are going to air really close to each other. So you'll hear his story, and then yours will come on after that. But he told his little deal of that era for him. And
watch it differ extremely.
Actually, everything you just said is really close.
Good.
So that got rolling in 2011,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't last too long. It was a couple of years, right?
Yeah, sadly. I think we just took off too fast. Mm. Not success-wise, but we just hit things too hard, and nobody was ready for it. And there was a lot of different people in that band with different ideas for it. You know, somebody in particular in the band didn't want to do a whole lot of shows. You know, some of us wanted to do shows every night.
Yeah,
some
ready of us to load up the van and hit the road.
One of us wanted to be a super weird experimental band. Somebody else in the band wanted to follow someone else's footsteps. Exactly, and it burned out.
It's a common story. Mm-hmm. You know, I think not necessarily around here, but it's a story I've heard a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been in a lot of bands with that just differing of opinions and sound, you know, songwriting and
you can
topics
feel
of what you write about. Like everything just kind of, it's almost like you just constantly argue
right. you can
over
feel
what
feel
to
it
do
coming.
With a riff or what an idea. You
it's,
know?
It's never a surprise. You know it's coming when it, yeah. When it does.
Well, you guys were fairly active. Yeah. When you were a band, and I remember seeing your name on a lot of flyers, and it was always well done. Like, the artwork was cool, the name looked cool.
Yeah, that was Reed. Reed was good at that.
Reed's doing all that
he was
stuff?
Really artsy with that stuff.
Yeah.
I'd text him an idea about something, you know, something ridiculous or whatever, and then he'd send me something back an hour later that
That's cool.
blow my mind.
Yeah, it was good stuff. So you recorded the one thing... Right, in Wade's...
Yeah, that was just a little four-song
demo.
Home
studio. Is that the only thing you recorded?
No, we held on to that for a little amount of time. Then, Ben Wells and John Lahan from Blackstone Cherry, and then I don't know his title. I think he was their tour manager or stage manager at the time. We called him Jonesy. His name was Ryan Gorman.
Yeah.
And Shep Shepherd.
That's when Music Is
all
Me
started Music
up.
Is Me, yeah. And they were hitting people up in the scene at that time, trying to get their business rolling, trying to get some people in.
Yeah. And that was when it first opened. It was on...
Reynolds Road.
Yeah, Reynolds Road. It was that little, just small
trailer.
Kind of... Yeah,
it was a double-wide trailer.
And they had the little music room in the front, mm-hmm. and then they had a studio in the other room.
Yeah.
And a lot of people recorded there.
Yeah.
I actually heard a lot of different recordings on the local music shows around here. Tommy and Bratcher both were playing... tracks going, you know, the band would be in the studio going, yeah, we recorded this, and Music Is Me. And
I know a few out of towners, like a couple states away, come down to do it.
Yeah,
you know?
Just high quality,
it was great.
Demo,
I had a ball in there,
yeah,
thought it was fantastic. I loved them, they were all super nice. And me and just speaking from my own personal experience, I feel like me and Jonesy got real tight. And Chris Robertson would come in and for a day or two and record something, and we you know sit and talk all day long.
They did actually a lot of their demo work in there.
Yeah,
too,
they did. Just... I got to hear a lot of cool B sides that have never been on a record. That really should be from that. But yeah, so we started that in October of 2000.
So the EP was recorded at Wade England's little home studio. And then you go to Music Is Me and record
a full-length record? Full length. It's the only one. And we did that in October of 2012.
Right.
So there's a good little gap there before we did that.
And what was the name of it?
It's just a self-titled record, yeah.
How many songs were on it?
10.
That's not bad.
And a bonus track, a hidden track.
Of course.
A ridiculous hidden track that I can't
that's the experimental
I can't
music
speak
part?
Of. Yeah, you got to just find it.
So when that came out, obviously you guys were doing fairly well and playing live and everything. It just kind of ended, huh?
Yeah, it just fizzled out.
That's a shame. Is the record available online?
Yeah, it's all over. It's iTunes and Spotify and
great
everything. So it's there for good. And I'm proud of it. And I think everyone else in the band is too. That wasn't an issue.
Right.
At all. And we had a really, really good time with Music Is Me and all those guys, and they did the best they could for us, and we just bumped heads too much, and we just got tired. Yeah. Some of us got tired of that.
So the band Undead Anna kind of falls apart. You end up going back to, in a way, like roots and doing like solo stuff, because I've seen your name plastered all over the place of booking shows. And what's cool about being an acoustic solo act in a way is you can do the regular stuff, opening for a band at a venue, a good size show kind of thing, and then you can play something like Lost River Pizza.
Yeah.
Or you can go to, you know, what?
Thursday Dublin's, nights.
Yeah,
you know,
Dublin's,
something.
All that stuff. So you've been doing that for a while.
Yeah.
That's nothing new for you.
No, I took a break right after Undead Anna ended. And that's when I moved to Louisville and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And I thought I was going to go up there and jump into that local circuit, but it's a different animal.
It's a different animal, and I was really impressed of how big it is. Yeah. Like, it's a big music scene, and you don't have any problems finding people, but you run into a bigger problem, I think, from, like, Bowling Green, it is kind of smaller, and it's easier to get through the system in a way of finding people up there. It's so huge of the music network. If you need a drummer, you find 500 drummers,
right?
You know,
but at the same time, the problem I kept running into was everybody already had too many projects going.
Yeah,
you know, so because I did meet a few people up there that were great musicians that just couldn't get it off the ground. So. Hmm. So I spent like 2 years up there that not playing music outside of my house.
Just working?
Just about killed me, yeah.
Hmm.
So I could not take that any longer.
So you come back home.
So I come back home and went right back into it just as hard as I could go.
And when was this?
2015, 2016.
Oh, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, you've done a lot in 4 years.
Yeah, thank you.
Because you've done not only the solo work, you've been working on some solo recordings.
Yeah.
So what is coming of that, and what's to be expected of it?
That is just a solo record that I've wanted to make for a long, long, long time. I didn't know how to go about it or what I wanted to do exactly.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Like, you've got songs, you've got the talent, you've got a vision in your brain. But it's a matter of, like,
I can never
getting
get it out.
To actually come to life.
I've never gotten it out. What's in my head?
Where have you been working on this at?
It's a place called Gem City Studios in Jellicoe, Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about three and a half hours away.
I think, didn't Gravel Switch
they
record
do.
There? Yeah.
That's how I met Matt McQueen, who's the guy there. He's the man. Engineer.
Yeah, they've actually... I know they've recorded there, but they've also shot, like,
yeah, he does a little
videos
everything.
And stuff, like, in the studio.
Yeah. Yeah,
really
he does
good
that stuff. The guy's a genius now.
Yeah.
Especially,
where is that located? That's, like,
it's
I guess going
it's on
south
the line.
Of, like, Columbia or something, right? If you're going toward east.
I don't pay attention enough when I go there. It's usually at night when I go. It's like, you know, you go out, you go towards Somerset and...
Yeah.
It's on the state line.
It's on the state line, yeah.
But it's way over there.
Right.
East.
So it's kind of going toward East Tennessee.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's closer to Knoxville than Nashville.
Ah,
if that makes any sense. If that makes more sense.
It does, because in my brain, when you're in Cookeville, you're like halfway between Nashville and Knoxville.
Yeah, okay. So I went and seen a show down in Nashville one night, and I was supposed to go record there afterwards, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be halfway there.
Yeah.
No, same amount of time, if not longer.
Yeah, it is. It's just an I-40 shot, really.
Right. So I've been doing that for a little while, but I'm taking my... Like I said, it's really far away, so it's hard to get there as often as I'd like. But I'm under no time limit. I'm no schedule.
Right.
Nobody's asking anything of me.
And you've been posting things. I mean, I see things on your Facebook page. So I know you've been active, but on your own terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you're saying, you're not in a hurry, not in a rush.
Right.
You're taking your time with it. You're going to put out a good record.
Thank you.
And I know that because I know what you do, and I know what you're working on. And to say that you're going there, like, that really sums it up, because obviously Matt's a genius.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of his work. I've heard some of his work.
He knows a lot of people, too.
He just has a really nice setup there.
One of the things, there's many things, but one, he's a really good engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's really good with, like, I'll play him a song as a scratch track, and he'll be like, no, we need a different mic. We need a different mic. A mic is a mic to me,
right.
You know? I don't
hear
that.
He hears things.
Yeah.
Different preamp.
Needs to run through a different preamp.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just let him go. I just let him run with this. And he knows a lot of people, a lot of musicians, a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of things on this record that I did not imagine would make it on this record. Like, good, like, incredible steel guitar work, lap steel work. We're going to put some...
Now, you're going through a lot of musicians that I guess he knows.
Yeah.
Have you brought any of your personal friends?
Not yet, but that's the plan.
Yeah.
I don't plan on leaving them out. I just haven't got to those songs yet.
Right. Because you really are taking your time.
Yeah.
Like, you have not said, I'm going to go in the studio and have a record out by summer.
Yeah.
Like, you're just slowly getting out these ideas that you've had for so long, but you're not just recording them with you and a guitar, which you could easily do.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing it right. You're going to make a record.
That keeps changing, too. Like, I went in, I was like, I'm going to make a really acoustic solo singer-songwriter folk record.
Right.
And then I get in there, Matt's, and he's got all of this gear and all these amps and all these effects pedals, and I can't stop making noises.
Yeah, it's a candy store.
Yeah, so it turned into a full production. So once that started happening, I was just like, well, you know, hell, we'll run with that. And like I said, I'm under no schedule, no microscope.
Right.
I'll do it for as long as I need to do it until it's right.
And it will be right. And I can't actually follow up on that by saying, well, when can we expect it?
Yeah.
But obviously sometime after this podcast.
Let's just say I'm not going to Chinese democracy it.
No.
It won't be that long.
We don't need a decade to wait. But obviously you're working on it.
Yes.
And it is coming into shape.
Yep.
And it will eventually see the light of day.
EP or LP depends on how I feel.
Yep.
Right now the amount of songs that I have done in my, at least songwriting wise, ready to go would probably be a fat EP.
Hmm.
But by the time I get to the end of those.
What is a fat EP?
It's like seven.
Eight songs?
Seven or eight. A fat EP. Copywritten.
If it's nine, it's an album, right?
It's now an LP, yeah.
I had this debate with somebody one day. I always thought an EP was seven songs,
mm-hmm.
like 3 to 7 songs. And an album was eight or more. And somebody was like, no, it's based on time.
Yeah.
If it's 20 minutes.
It is.
It's an EP. And I'm like, well, I can record 12 minute and a half songs. You know, I can make an EP, but have 12 songs.
Yeah. That always confused me, too. And I dug into that and found that out, too.
Isn't
yeah,
that weird?
That's true, yeah.
I always thought it was based on, like, song tracks.
So actually, it won't be an EP at all.
It'll be a short record.
You know, like back in the day, like Boston's first record, eight songs, you know?
Yeah.
Aerosmith had records that were eight songs.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of Van Halen albums were
Zeppelin
like
records,
eight,
I think,
eight
right?
songs, nine songs.
Yeah, so, yeah, screw it. It's a full album.
And it's going to be your album. Well, before we hop into current modern day stuff, we're going to step back in time a little bit.
Okay.
And talk to me about once you got really going, you know, obviously you've already covered that of guitar playing and developing your craft for it. Who were some of your influences, and musically, what were you into growing up?
My father gave me my love for rock and roll, which was, I grew up on like Aerosmith's Pandora's Box, mm-hmm. and cut my teeth on that. And he was also into like 80s rock, which I dug on for a little while, but it was
and
more
you're an 80s kid.
Yeah, but it was more
on the cusp of it.
It was more of, I mean, just barely, yeah. too. And it was more of like just the rock and roll part of the whole 80s scene that rubbed off, not
right.
so much the 80s glam style, but that and Zeppelin is real good. And my brother's 5 years older than me, and that means nothing as adults, you know, because we're in the same world,
right?
But when you're younger, you know, there's these certain ages that things happen in life.
Oh yeah.
And so that's a big gap. So like, for example, when he was driving a vehicle and gone all the time running around, I was still not a teenager,
right?
Just sitting at home. And he had a big stack of CDs with like Queen and all the Aerosmith records and Guns N' Roses and all kinds of stuff. And a lot of that was my father's, but my brother had a sweet section that had like Alice in Chains and Bush. Bush is one of my favorite bands of all time.
Wow.
Stuff like that, you know, the good 90s.
Yeah.
90s rock. And that's
great 90s.
That's where I found that.
And yeah, you were what, 10
yeah.
in 99,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, that was like a good time to come of age and discover music, because at that point, you had the great music between the 40s, 50s, 60s, and the 70s, 80s, and 90s,
yes.
you know, because going into 2000.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
It was changing pretty different, but, you know, that era, in my opinion, between 88 and 95, like, that's just, you can't even
yes.
touch it, you know, it's like, that was, I'm glad I was alive during that time.
Yeah,
and I think anybody that's a musician that grew up as a kid in the 50s, but then by the time they were a teenager in the 60s, and here comes Cream and Zeppelin and Hendrix and Sabbath, and
mm-hmm.
can you imagine?
I can't.
It's the same. I've always felt like I was in middle school when it was dominated by Poison and Slaughter and hair metal and all that stuff, and then out of the blue, you know, here comes Jane's Addiction,
yeah,
and Alice in Chains and all that stuff, and it's like, wow, you know, it's like you just get slapped in the face,
and it's
like,
so much,
yeah,
so much of it. And my father had like a fantastic cassette collection in a case that we all talk about from this day. They got stolen. Someone stole it out of his Volkswagen Golf.
Probably had the good stuff too.
Yeah, it was so good. I used to take it and had a big like stereo system that had like two tape decks in it, and I could put a blank tape deck in one, and then put, you know, one of his Tom Petty, his Full Moon Fever, and copy it over so I could have it, and then he could keep his tapes.
Yep.
Wouldn't have to worry about him losing and stuff.
That's cool.
I did that a lot, and then that's Tom Petty is probably my number one favorite.
Really?
Yeah, it's always there was like a time. Even like Undead Anna, I don't know, I kind of like put it in the back of my mind because I was super into making Undead Anna like a Bush band.
Mm.
But Tom Petty's always been there.
And you did a Tom Petty tribute thing.
Yes.
I remember it was Keith and
Robert Ray.
Yeah, Robert. But who? I think Keith and Andy were the masterminds.
Yeah, Andy Wales.
Behind it.
Andy Wales is
his
Andy whole
Wales
family.
And Keith Hurt kind of put the idea together.
Yeah.
And then Keith had to kind of drop off after the first show or something because mm-hmm. he got really involved with his restaurant.
Right, right.
But yeah, you were part of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was last year, wasn't
yep. it? We did like three or four of them. And
yeah.
Then towards the end, the last one or two.
But it was a full-blown Tom Petty tribute show.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would have a variety of singers come on to do the songs. And so, I mean, obviously, as a Tom Petty fan, that must have been something
else.
That
was fantastic. And then, like the last one we did at Rib Liquors, they just didn't even do the multi-vocalist thing. I just got to
stay in the whole set,
you know. And, like, I still bring it up. I text them all, you know. Like, yeah. I put us in.
Ready when you are.
I put us in the Concerts in the Park running for this year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Without even asking them.
You guys should do that.
But they didn't select us. So. But, you know, yeah, I think they're all kind of, like, over it or whatever, because it's not, you know, Tom Petty's music is very simple.
Well, what they started has now evolved into a band.
Yes, yes, true.
High Fidelity band, so that's cool.
Right.
So I'm happy for
you're talking about some masterclass musicians now.
Oh, yeah.
They are fantastic.
Andy Wells, Quentin Ferris.
So accurate. They'll sit here and be all humble about it, but I remember just being so blown away at how accurate the
song
sounded.
Yeah, the song selection, obviously the talent involved with those guys. I mean, yeah, that's good stuff.
So that was like the greatest night of my life.
That's cool. Well, as a guitar player, who growing up had a big influence on you? Not necessarily style-wise. Did you, you know, emulate anybody, or were you just heavily influenced by a lot of random people?
I don't want to say, let's say not talent-wise, because I'm no way, shape, or form putting myself in the league with these cats, but like Joe Perry and Jimmy Page, Mike Campbell, all of them, they're fantastic. And then, I always considered myself to be more of like a front man, right? Like the mixture of both.
Right.
And Gavin Rosdale always was captivating to watch. Not that I got to see him when they're in their 90s heyday or nothing. I was a child, but all the videos you can find, that always kept my attention. I loved them.
I've never met anyone tell me that they're like a huge Bush fan.
I haven't either, I don't know. They did something to me, something magical.
They did have a cool sound. I'll admit that. Like the first album, I remember. I'm really good. Me and Eric Curtis grew up together, and he went and saw him in Nashville on that first tour.
I did too. I was there
at 328.
Porter.
This would have been in like 90.
Oh, I thought you meant like
94.
The first time they come back.
No. This was
I was there as an infant.
Glycerine came out. Like, this is when those songs were huge. The Little Things or what? I don't even know.
Yeah.
But he went down to 328 to see him and came back and told me, he's like, "Ma, it was great. It was like one of the best concerts I've been to."
They are one of the best I've ever
seen.
And
that would have been in probably 93, 94, maybe even 95. It was just somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
Whenever that record came out, it was huge.
I want to say it's 94, that 16 Stone record.
Yeah.
But Gavin Rosdale, as a front man, for that style of rock and roll, I always definitely
try to
emulate that. Yeah.
That's what stood out to me about it. But so obviously the combination, it wasn't really about being a guitar god for you. It was more about just playing for the song and being more of a songwriter.
Definitely,
and
definitely. Yeah, I've actually put it that way before. I never wanted to be the best guitar player around or the best singer around, but I will always continue to try to be one of the best songwriters around.
Well, you're obviously doing something right.
That's a goal that I'll keep going.
Yeah. Well, that makes it anticipating to hear the solo record that you're working
on. Now I'm kind of... Did I dig myself in a hole? Does it have to kill now?
Now it has to kill.
God.
It totally has to kill.
I did it to myself. Shot myself in the foot, as they say.
I'm sure it will be awesome. Well, man, what am I missing here? I can always touch on the same questions, you know, influences and music that you grew up listening to.
Yeah.
But you've covered all those bases, so that leads us to modern day time.
All right.
You are a member of Kiss Kiss Bang.
I am.
You were not an original member of Kiss Kiss Bang.
No.
But when they came out, it was the five guys, I believe.
Four.
Malcolm, Trevor, Corbin and Andrew. And then they had something happen. And I think it was a work issue or some sort. And they kind of, I wouldn't say they broke up, but they did kind of come to a halt for a minute. But then they emerged.
Yeah.
And you were in the band.
Yeah. I don't even know those details as to what that was
right, because you weren't in it at the time. But you and Trevor obviously have a pretty good history together. I know you guys do shows together all the time. We've
known each other for a good while. He was in a band called 449 back in the day when Undead was making their runs and stuff.
That's right.
We met. He was a child.
Yeah.
Child. I think he lied to me about his age every year. Like
this
every
coming
year.
From a guy with a fake ID.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but he was like 20 years old for 7 years, you know? It wasn't until like recently I realized how old he actually really
is.
That's funny. But yeah, so they have that thing or whatever, and they actually come back and play for a while without me before I started.
Okay.
And
I just remember they did some kind of disappear for a while, and it was almost like an announcement was made of like, hey, we're done. And I caught wind that I guess Corbin was having issues with his work schedule.
Yeah.
And
probably.
And it's. Seems to me that they needed a drummer, and I messaged Malcolm and I was like, are you guys needing a drummer? Because I'll totally step in there and do it. And he was like, I don't know what's going on.
Very soap opera-ish with them.
I don't know. I mean, see, I didn't even get any of that.
I threw out the thing
of if you need a drummer, I'll do it. But I always have to do those things and not step on the toes of the guy that you know that's already in there.
Yeah. Well, like,
but I didn't know what was happening or if they'd broken up or whatever. And he kind of told me what was going on. He said something about his work schedule. But lo and behold, out of the blue, they come back. And they come back really strong.
Yeah, they're so tight and so close. Like, yeah. I'm sure the reason why Malcolm was the way he was when you talked to him is because, they were broken up, but he's just really betting on them coming back.
Well, I mean, he told me pretty much in detail what had happened. Yeah. And it was something to do with Corbin's work schedule. But anyway, they do come back and start playing again, recording again. Obviously, the name was doing great. I mean, they were playing a lot of shows, or at least what they could in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But you do end up getting into the band.
Yeah.
So what's the story of how that actually unfolded?
We've all been friends for a long time, and I was always around, and especially in recent years when they got back together and started hitting it hard, and then that's when I started pushing this solo act,
right?
Whatever you want to call it. Singer, songwriter, whatever. At the same time, we were kind of running together and hanging out together and being around each other and writing songs with each other and stuff. And we're all huge Foo Fighter fans.
Right.
And, you know, in the recent few records, Pat Smear come back, they had this fat, huge sound because there's these three guitars.
Right.
And they wanted that, and they wanted another singer, three-part harmonies. You don't hear that often around.
No.
So... they asked me if I would. I was a little hesitant at first, to be honest. Their first record and style that they were going for at first just wasn't exactly my cup of tea. I thought it was a fantastic record. I just wasn't so sure I would fit.
Right.
But I tried it. I told them I'd give it a shot. And then when songwriting began after I started... obviously, when you add a member to a band or take one out, things come and go, that person's influences and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now a lot of these new songs feel like my songs, like I belong with them and that they're part of me too. And I'm blown away by how good they sound, and I'm proud of them all. And it's turned into absolutely 100% my band.
Right. So far, since you've been with them and since they've kind of come back, they have recorded and released, was it just an EP?
We haven't released
it. Oh, you haven't been released?
No.
Okay, so what are the guys on the local radio playing? Is it just a couple songs that
you've put
out?
We've given them a track or two of it.
Yeah.
But we haven't released it to the public yet. We recorded in Louisville with Jordan Haynes at Early Grace Studios. Mm-hmm. He's a fantastic little genius too. Great great guitar sounds. He's in a band called Artifex Pero. I think they're a Christian rock band. I'm not entirely accurate on that, but they're doing okay too.
Mm-hmm.
So we started doing that back in the summer and going up a little piece at a time and just cutting tracks as we wrote them.
Right. And yeah, Trevor did one of these Sound Atlas podcasts a while back, and I remember him saying that it was in the works. It's happening.
Yeah.
But kind of like what you were saying earlier about yours, it's not being rushed. Mm-hmm. It's not got a date on it, but it is in the works. It is happening, but it's almost at the pace that you all want it to be
at. Right.
You're not
absolutely
gonna just bang out just anything. You want it to be good.
We don't have anybody telling us to do it, you know.
Right.
And it's almost dropped before as a 3-song EP.
Mm-hmm.
Then we wanted to add a couple more, and then we were gonna do that, and then we decided not to do that and make it a full length, and now we don't know if we're gonna make it a full length or what.
And now it's a 7-inch.
Yeah, right. So now it's just I think we are gonna go back here soon in the next few months and cut a few more, and it's kind of just on hold temporarily for reasons I can't speak about yet, but they're very, very promising.
As a musician, I know what you're getting at.
Yeah. Somebody,
I know this language.
Somebody wants us to hold on to it.
Yeah.
Not let it go just yet. So.
Well, can you say how many songs you've tracked so far?
So far, it is 6.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's a hefty EP.
Fat EP, yeah. Yes, it is. Yep.
And it'd be a good one, too. Well, even though you don't have necessarily a record out, you do have songs released. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're on your websites and everything that anyone out there listening to this can pull up and find them. But you are very active. You're a very active band. And, I mean, on a pretty wide scale. I mean, you play small stages and you've played some pretty good-sized venues opening for people. How's all that going? Obviously, you've got good management.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That is Malcolm, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was bred in him, I guess. He's just really good
at
networking.
The networking and management stuff.
So, you know, we're playing. I know this is going to air good after this weekend, long after this weekend, but we got.
This coming weekend.
Yeah, we got,
so to speak.
This whole weekend is full.
Yeah.
Here in town at Spillway and then up in Glasgow at Rib Liquors. But then come March and April, we got big shows with Buck Cherry.
Yeah, talk about March and April, because this episode should air in March.
Okay.
Probably about mid-March. So
March 23rd at Manchester Music Hall in Lexington, Kentucky, mm-hmm. we're opening for Buck Cherry up there.
Okay.
I think Joyce Wolf is on the bill, too. They're a new upcoming band who sounds pretty good. I've enjoyed what they've released so far.
That's cool.
And then so their guys, whoever that may be, whoever is in charge of their booking or whatever, dug into us a little bit and really loved what he heard and put us on the Nashville show month, which is April 8th, and that's at the Cowan, which is I think part of Top Golf. It's new.
Yeah, off Jefferson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It's new, and I've never been, but all the pictures and everybody I've talked to says it's incredible.
Well, that's a nice place. I mean, it's pretty new, but I've seen some shows booked there. They're pretty good quality bands, you know.
Yeah.
But it's Nashville.
Right.
I mean, even the shittiest bar down there has a great PA system.
That's true.
So, you guys got some good stuff coming up for 2019
music video soon.
Yeah,
I think.
But you can't really necessarily say in stone if you're gonna have an album released anytime soon. But it doesn't really matter because you're playing.
Yeah.
If you've got good songs, you guys have plenty of shows, and you've got more shows coming.
Tell you what.
So if anybody wants to hear these songs, they're just gonna have to come see them.
We're not holding on to them in a live aspect. You can hear every song we've tracked, and are going to track at a live show.
Right. And I think you're doing it right. Instead of recording an album and then going out, you're going out and you're getting a fan base, and then you'll have the big record release and all that stuff. So, and in my opinion, that's the smart way to do it.
They anticipate the tracks, you know. Right. They want to. That's the number one thing we hear the most.
It's the old-fashioned way of building a fan base, mm-hmm. is grassroots.
Yep.
And instead of having record companies and money saturate the market to just cram a band down people's throats,
right.
you're actually earning it. You're earning your fan base. You're earning respect. You're a live band.
We try to be that.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And it shows. I mean, I saw you guys recently. I got to introduce you guys before you played. That was cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, it just, you're a live band. So, you know,
that's goal number one. That's our number one on our list. We try to be as tight and as
it was good.
Entertaining as we can be.
It was a good show. And
malfunctions and all.
Yeah. That's right. You did have a malfunction.
My board ate shit. For no,
I forgot. I had to like throw out some stupid comedy because your pedal board quit working or something.
I loved it. I actually had a ball that it did. By the way, I don't know what happened because it was fine the next day.
Yeah,
but
it was because you were on stage. And,
I guess
and
so.
You had five minutes.
Yeah, and people were looking at me. So I got to I just yanked that cable out and stuck it in the amp and just played straight through, which is really fun. To do just to get that just to the amp. You got nothing hiding, nothing covering you up. It was great. I had a ball.
That's cool.
And everybody's running Helixes but me, so I'm the only guy with tubes.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew's got a.
But that's kind of cool though, because it makes that sound. It's mm-hmm. such a full sound. Like you said, it's not only three guitars. It's guitars in different sound formats. You know. So.
Yep. Most tracks. All the way through, we're all doing something different.
Yeah,
because that's important. You don't want too many people doing the same thing at the same time.
That's true. Well, on a local music note, what is going on out there these days that you're a big fan of?
The Josephines, for sure. I can't get enough of them. They're really, really sweet guys too. Mm-hmm. Really enjoy hanging out with them.
That's just a bottle of fun right there.
Yes, it is.
You know, like, everything they do is just so fun.
Yeah.
Like, the social media posts are funny. The videos, like, you can just see how much fun they're having.
It's not like they're like a touring band. They're like a touring party.
Yeah.
And they do
get
it well.
Good stuff, too.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I really love it. Brad Tabor come to A-Frame a little while back and let us hear some of the new stuff they cut at Blackbird, and it's incredible.
Oh yeah,
yeah, it's amazing. Love them, and pretty much just anybody who constantly or continues to work on their craft and put out stuff. I love it. I don't consider myself much of a judger of people. Not my taste, but.
Yeah.
I still appreciate it.
Right.
But, I guess the Josephines and still catch all the Sixth Floor shows mm-hmm. all the time.
Especially now that they're back.
Right. loved the Black Bloods when they were around.
Yes.
There for that short period of time. And I was in Black Bloods for 5 days.
And I auditioned for them after you did.
5 days.
Yeah. I did. They were auditioning drummers, and I talked to Blake and Eric, and I was like, hey, you know, I was kind of taking a break from drums, but mm-hmm. I was like, I would come back to playing drums for that.
Yeah.
Because
I
really dug it.
They're good.
And they sent me songs to learn, and I showed up, and we rehearsed, and I was like the first drummer. I think maybe Quentin auditioned too, but
he did.
I was like, don't just hand it to me because I'm the only drummer that shows in, you know, go out there and mm-hmm. audition people. And I don't know what came of it. Last time I saw Eric, he said it kind of is just between life and work and all that stuff, like it's just not happening. But I think the thing about Black Bloods to me was that what they had with the people when those guys left,
them only,
you're not going to get that.
Right.
Like you would have to start from scratch.
Yep.
So I hope Blake does that.
I do too.
He's brilliant.
I love him. He's such a sweet guy.
Yeah.
I loved the Black Bloods.
Can you imagine touring with Blake?
Right.
Like the food.
Yeah.
Would be incredible.
Yeah, and his Fortnite capabilities are beyond
that too.
Compare.
Yeah.
But I had so much fun in the short little time I did, just being with him and hanging out with him. And
that would have been interesting. I mean, juggling Black Bloods and
that's what happened.
Playing in Kiss Kiss Bang
on my
solo
end.
Stuff.
I had too much. I think. Yeah, I had Black Bloods and my solo stuff and Kiss Kiss Bang, and then the Tom Petty thing was happening at that time too.
Oh,
there was
true.
A show.
Yeah.
I had like 40 songs to learn and memorize, and it just was
juggling.
It wasn't in the cards for me.
All right, who else, man? Anybody else stand out? Now, maybe not necessarily current modern day bands, but maybe some bands from the past that you grew up fans of around here.
I didn't really like hook on to many bands around here too much, too hard. I know that sounds awful, but
well, I mean,
I didn't. I just kind of focused
it's not
on.
Not everybody kind of does the fan thing and the musician thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very few that I know kind of do that.
Yeah.
They have their little friends and bands that they hang out with, you know, but I don't know a lot of people that just randomly go out to see just anybody. You know?
I love the Spiked Fallen. I love Todd and Johnny and Gravel Switch, too. I can't believe they left my mind over there talking about Gem City. Seth, and I've known Seth for a long time, at least. As far as like playing
yeah,
live,
been a band for a while
yeah,
now.
Yeah, playing live music. He's always been around. So
that's true. And that's another thing about. I've brought it up in the past about the connection of Glasgow and all that stuff, but it seems like Somerset area has a lot of musicians too that come around here.
I just had a light bulb. Van Winkle and the Spirits.
Yes,
I really, really enjoy them.
They're good.
Yes, I've seen them. Few months back at Tidballs, and I'd heard their name and haven't heard them though or anything, didn't know anything about them, and they were kind of background music for the first 30 seconds until I couldn't focus on anybody else and had to just watch the rest of the show.
Yeah, that is good stuff. I think that band evolved out of members of Floored, if I'm not mistaken.
I wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know? Mm-mm. Is that before your time?
Maybe. I feel like
Might
I know
be.
It. Was there a Hampton in that band?
Maybe. I can't recall. I'm terrible with names.
Yeah. I can't remember. I might not. But definitely, I do believe it was before my time. At least my.
It was kind of like a late 90s.
At least my fake band. ID time.
Yeah, I would say so.
Fake ID don't work when you're 12.
No, definitely not.
Does not.
Well, what does the future have in store? I think we've already established that. You've got a solo record in the works. Kiss Kiss Bang has got recordings going on. Could be an EP. Could be an album. Could be something.
Could be a deluxe LP.
It should be. Your first album should be a double album.
Yeah.
Why
like,
not?
Like people care so much.
If you got the songs, make it happen.
Here's a bunch of demos and stuff. You know, like... Like, there's, like, a legion of fans who are interested in hearing the junk you sift through. Man, I just want to keep writing songs and playing shows.
I would say the future
whatever.
Is looking good for you, sir, because you've definitely carved a really nice path to this point. And once this is recorded and aired, and years later, you'll listen back to this and go, man, a lot's happened. Because I can see it all around. You see it in people. You can meet people and just instantly tell now if they're going to be all talk and no action or if they're going to be action.
Well,
and
you've thank
been
you.
Working.
Thank you
all
so much.
This time.
That's important to me.
Well, it's true. I mean, there's no denying it. I mean, you look at what you've done in just a short amount of time.
Yeah.
You know, Undead Anna was what? 2010? I mean,
yeah.
And just all this time.
Well, I've been lucky enough to be surrounded with people who's been doing it a long time, who's wise in it, like Wade. Wade was a big deal for me.
And he mentioned that in a way about kind of being the older guy that's seasoned and was helping you guys kind of learn.
I mean, he bought me a tuner pedal because I didn't think I needed one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Always had picks on him.
Yeah.
Always had cables. Always ready for shit to
and
to not work.
And you learned from that.
Yeah.
And now you do that.
I don't leave without 75 picks in my bag.
Yep.
Extra cables. Everything.
You learn from everybody.
Good. Good to go.
So you have definitely surrounded yourself with the best.
Yeah.
And a lot of good talent and a lot of good people. I think that's definitely shown in your work. But you're still very much your own. I can't say you've copied anybody.
Cool. Good.
And there's a lot of people you can, you know, that they're a fan of this band or this artist, and you can always tell that they're just trying pretty hard to, you know, not really copy them, but just the influence is so strong.
They want
to
be in
that
niche.
It's hard to deny it, you know. I don't see that in you, though.
Good, because, I mean, behind closed doors, it happens all the time. I can't tell me how many Tom Petty songs
but
I've rewritten.
I would never have thought you were that big of a Tom Petty fan.
Yeah, okay, good.
Because when you're on stage doing your thing, it's very much you.
Cool.
So the influence may be there, but you're very much original.
Thank
so
you.
That's
Thank
cool.
you so much. So, I think I've rewritten several Tom Petty songs all the time. And I have to just kick them out because I can't not do it, you know? I'm like, that melody's always going to be sweeter than the one I can come up with, so
yeah,
might as well squash it.
That's the hardest thing about being a big fan of somebody.
Speaking of, I probably shouldn't, but I'll go ahead and touch on it, because he's in some pretty deep water. I was a big Ryan Adams fan. Now, him as a person.
Literally just happened,
right.
Like this week or something.
I've always heard that he was just a huge douchebag. I followed him on social media and stuff for a while and had to cut that out because
he was
a huge douchebag. He really was. And I knew I'd never want to meet him in person because I wouldn't like him.
Yeah.
And I love his music, so I didn't want to soil that. And all this shit that's spinning around right now is...
Yeah. It's ugly.
It is bad.
But you know what? It really represents a lot of the music scene, though.
Mm-hmm.
Not here, but music business,
yes.
Let's say. Because I spent a lot of time in Nashville, and I would meet a lot of, you know, female artists and singers, songwriters, and, you know, as a drummer, you get a lot of work pretty easy of just people putting bands together to do a show, and I would hear horror stories about these ladies going in to cut demos and just trying to get somewhere in the business for themselves. They wanted to succeed. And, man.
It's unreal.
It was ugly.
Can you imagine how that'd make you feel, you know?
You can. I mean, I can't mentally put myself in their shoes. But I can put myself in the shoes of the asshole that's treating them that way.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, why?
Yeah.
Why do you do that? It's horrible.
Some people are just wired to be just the biggest...
I guess.
Douchebags on the planet.
It's just, it's such a horrible thing. It's in entertainment everywhere,
right.
But it's definitely in the music business.
And I'm sure there's going
to
be...
people like Ryan that really brings it, you know, up to light, so to speak.
And I'm sure there's about to be a lot more.
Well, and there should be, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Keep it coming, for sure. You know, I don't hate it that one of my favorite songwriters turns out to be a monster. I hate the fact that he's a fucking monster.
Yeah.
But that's the only way to deal with that shit, is to smack him in the mouth and bring it out.
That's true. Well, on a lighter note, to wrap things up, where can anyone find your music out there in the internet land?
Yeah, I got a single out called Runaway out right now. It's on all digital platforms, iTunes and Apple Music and Spotify.
There's so many.
Yeah, I can't keep up with it. But honest to God, yeah, it's there. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Oh no, not Reverb.
No. That one.
I got banned from Reverb Nation.
Not cool anymore.
I got
pulled. Is Reverb Nation the MySpace of the music
page? Yeah, I guess so. But I got like removed from it.
Damn.
Like
really?
They handpicked me and removed me.
That's weird.
No explanation. So I can't use like.
You better message Tom at MySpace about that. Maybe he knows some of it.
Yeah, I heard he's a dick too. But anywhere you can buy music, it's on there.
Right. So just obviously, if people Google your name, they'll find it.
Yeah, for sure. And there's an extra track of a song called The Reckoning mm-hmm. which is my take on a Western.
Oh, cool.
On there, and that's an acoustic version that I cut with John King in his studio at home.
That's right.
So that's a couple of little...
I remember that being posted or something, yeah. Or at least mentioned.
Butler County team up right there, yeah. So I put it on there because it sounds incredible. It sounds great.
Recorded at Workhorse mm-hmm. Studios.
I think that's the first one.
Yeah, because he had updated like his recording equipment. Yeah.
Right. And I had a ball. Yeah. I thought we had a good time in there. And this track sounds good, so I tacked it on
right.
instead of just releasing one track and put it on it. So it's on there too. It's a bonus. So
that's cool.
Get a little more for your money.
Yeah. Going back to your band Undead Anna, mm-hmm. you said that stuff is available.
It's also
online as
everywhere.
Well.
I also have like 800 CDs. If anybody wants physical
I will take
copy,
one.
Do you want one?
I would very much like okay. one. Okay. Because obviously that's the only one.
I'll have to bring you one. I don't think I have one in the truck.
I'll find you somewhere.
Yeah.
We run into each other.
I'll throw it in the truck and it'll be there next time.
Yep. Before we go, I have to ask.
Okay.
What does the name Undead Anna come from?
Ooh. I don't know if I want to spill them beans.
See, I asked you before we started taping if there's anything.
I know you did, didn't you? Didn't you?
It's a mystery name.
Okay, so.
It's a good name and it's. But it also, I think, from a person that's not in the band or doesn't know you, it has to, it does ask a question of
okay.
where did that name come from?
Is
it morbid? Is it
no
something you don't want to talk about?
It's more metaphorical, I guess.
Okay.
There was a girl during that time that just would not get out of my fucking mind.
Yeah,
couldn't kill her.
So good or bad?
Not literally. By the way, I guess that's
yeah. You might want to be literal.
Yeah.
About that.
I don't know. I was just tied up with her. I was just wrapped up with her, and she
so
wanted nothing to do with me. Yes, yeah.
With a girl.
Yeah, yeah.
But on a good note.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, okay. For sure.
What's her name?
It was close
Anna?
To it. It was close. It was close in the name book. I didn't want to just
gotcha.
Put her on blast. But
gotcha.
Yeah, this is the first time I've ever said that.
Well, and I'm asking in a way because Wade did his
yeah, he didn't know,
me,
did he?
And I asked him what the name what the name was, and he said, "I don't know. You'll have to ask Clayton." And so there you are.
I never told none of them. Knew.
Well, he didn't know. He yeah. honestly was like, "I don't know."
Well, at the time, I was like sour shithead about it. You know, I was like, "Don't ask me that." Now it don't matter.
So now it doesn't matter. No, okay. No. Well, there you go. That has answered maybe a question for a lot of people out there, including me.
I hope so. I hope there was a lot of people wondering.
Well, I was wondering because I've already asked. To wrap this up, obviously, Kiss Kiss Bang is going strong.
Yes, sir.
You guys are doing really good, and obviously the future is very bright. It is 2019. But this is a podcast, almost time capsule type thing.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be preserved for many, many years to come. So I wish you luck, and I wish all of you guys luck, and I hope good things come your way.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you having
me. You're
at
the right age that something could happen.
Absolutely.
So it'd be nice to see yet another band from Bowling Green have major success.
I'd be lying if I said we didn't want it, but...
You'd be lying.
I think most of us just want to keep being able to play music.
Well, you want to do it. You know, you want to succeed. Obviously, if you can make a living doing it,
just make me
job.
Not have to go to work every day
right.
at 5 a.m. That's it. That's all.
And
I want.
When the day comes that you can quit your job and play mm-hmm. guitar and sing, and
I'm gonna do it in the most dramatic fashion.
Have fun.
The most dramatic fashion. Quit my job.
Is there anything we've missed before we wrap this?
No, I'm a very lame fella. I don't have... That's you pretty much covered 29 years of my life.
That's all we needed.
In an hour.
Well, thank you for being here. Thank you for doing this. And
thank you
for being not only a fan of this podcast, but contributing to this music scene.
Thank you for having me and making me feel important.
You are very important.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Alrighty.